In the 1970s, Noah Greenfeld may well have been the most famous autistic child in America. His father, Josh Greenfeld, wrote several books about raising Noah. Noah's older brother is acclaimed journalist Carl Tero Greenfeld. He's written his own book about life with Noah. It's called Boy Alone, A Brother's Memoir. Carl Tero Greenfeld says that the challenges of raising Noah caused a lot of tension between his parents.
My mother punched my father in the face. They were fighting a lot at home. And I think, as any of your listeners know who are parents, when you have a sick child at home, things are tough anyway. You're always sort of trying to baby that child and help that child. And having Noah was like always having a sick child in a way. And I think both of them were frustrated with how much they were doing and how hard they were trying for Noah. And Noah, unfortunately, he never had that miraculous breakthrough that some middle-functioning and higher-functioning autistic people have. He remained profoundly autistic and remains so to this day. And I think there was a lot of frustration for my parents in how much they were doing and how they weren't getting the results they wanted, and they couldn't take it out on Noah. So some of it was manifest in these arguments with each other.
But I keep thinking about the emotional tension in that and how what effect that must have had on you. In fact, one of the things that's sort of disturbing about that scene as you describe it is that it was a shock for you to see your mother hit your father, but you said your father had hit you in the past. I suppose, in a way, because he couldn't hit Noah.
My father wrote very candidly in A Child Called Noah how he used to hit both of us. Never violently, but I think it was in part out of frustration. And I think it was also the generation that he was from. I mean, he was raised by a father who hit him. I don't do that with my children. You know, I hope I break that terrible chain. It's also a different era. I think corporal punishment now is much more frowned upon than it was at that time. But I don't know. I don't equate my father's parenting of me or my mother's parenting of me. I don't somehow claim that Noah impacted that as well. I'm not sure that I can do that. And it's always very hard to separate out what happened to me because of me and what happened to me because of Noah.
Well, but the boy alone of the title of your book is you.
I think it's both of us. I think it's both of us.
You are each alone.
Yeah, I think that's one of the great sadnesses of my life and the great regrets of my life is that I've never had a conversation with my brother.
Not once, ever, all these years?
No, we've never spoken. Noah's nonverbal. He can't speak. I think he understands a lot of what I say. I think he understands a lot of what's going on around him, but he can't talk. And so it remains to me that, you know, this deep sense of longing that I have to talk to my brother just once was one of the reasons I wrote this book. And the book is, in a sense, a conversation with my brother, or it becomes that. I only realized when I began writing this book how desperately I missed him. And while I loved him, it was in a sense unrequited because I'd never had a conversation with him.
Tell me about the real Noah, the one that was actually there. You spent a lot of time with him. You, in fact, worked in a school that your mother ran.
Yeah, we ran a daycare center. My mother founded a daycare center for the developmentally disabled. I used to work there plenty of afternoons when they were short-staffed. Noah's always been an enigma. Whenever I thought that I had figured him out or understood him, he would change on a dime. He was always very hard to read. Trying to figure out his moods has been, you know, maybe the great decoding challenge of my parents' lives. And it's very difficult for someone who is nonverbal, and Noah didn't have the manual dexterity really to learn sign language. It's very difficult because one of the ways he communicates is by having a tantrum. If he has a headache, he has no way of telling you he has a headache, really. So he might hit his head or start banging his head almost as an effort to communicate that he has a headache. If he has a toothache, there's no way for him to tell you he has a toothache. So on a very rudimentary level, this lack of communication influences behavior and can make him sometimes hard to handle.
And for the person who's trying to handle him, too, you are constantly in a state of trying to figure out what it is. And in that sense, I suppose, throwing your own expectations, trying to say, well, if that were me, I would mean this.
We project. I mean, sometimes my mother and my father and I still have arguments about what we think Noah meant, because we all tend to project our own ideas onto his behavior sometimes. And a lot of specialists and therapists in the past were seduced by that same belief that they understood Noah. They could unlock Noah. They got Noah. And they would invest the hours and the days and the months and almost always come back with very, very little in terms of results.
So Noah is still at the center of your life in many ways, and for your parents as well.
I think so. And in fact, I'm moving back to Los Angeles with my family in part to take on more of a conservatorship role, or take on a conservatorship role, actually, along with my parents, in part because my parents are getting older. My dad's 82 now. My father never told me, and my mother never told me, that I'm going to have to take care of Noah when they're gone. But, I mean, I understood that that was going to be me.
Yeah. Where is
and
he now?
He's in a home in Los Angeles, a supported living home run by an outfit called Diverse Journeys, and he's in a better place than he was a couple of years ago. He was in a state facility and was getting injured and beat up a little bit. Unfortunately, that happens way too often in the state facilities. And we were lucky and got him out and into a supported living home where it's better. It's not perfect, but, you know, as his family members and as those who love him, nothing will ever be perfect. We want the best for Noah.
So what is life like for Noah now?
He doesn't have a day program. He goes out, you know, maybe goes to the park, goes take a walk with one of his caregivers, and he doesn't have that much of a day. We visit him. We hang out with him for a bit. He goes to a restaurant maybe if he's in a good mood. If he's in a bad mood, you can't really take him anywhere. And I don't think it's a very enriching day. I wish it were. I wish we could find something, you know, a supported work program or something we could do for him. But Noah's always required one-on-one supervision and care. And almost no programs really will provide that for him. So it's up to us to try to figure out some way to get him out more. I think when I'm in Los Angeles, I mean, I go there very often as it is, but once I'm living there, I'm going to be able to do a little more. I'm going to be able to go see him a lot more. I can maybe take him out a little bit. I hope that makes a difference.
But what's it like then for you when you go? You wrote in the book that sometimes he'll hug you and sometimes he'll spit on you.
Well, that's exactly what it's like. And you don't know what you're going to get. When you knock on the door to his house and you go in, you don't know what you're going to get. I guess that, you know, he'll take a shot at me sometimes. He'll pinch me. He'll scratch me. He'll try to pull my hair when he's in a bad mood. When he's a good mood, he's a sweetheart. And that's always been one of the enigmas and mysteries of Noah. And much of my childhood was spent with that same wariness about Noah and uncertainty about exactly what I was going to get.
Carl Tero Greenfeld is the author of Boy Alone, A Brother's Memoir.